Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Agyamitsimirandasya Gyanandana Sharakaya Chakshurun Militam Gena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So today we are celebrating the appearance day of Lord Ram. Sometimes people are confused about so many different gods from India. So I wanted to explain a little bit about that before we talk about this particular incarnation. This world is a created world. Everything we experience in this world is temporary. Our lives are temporary. The material manifestation is temporary. The seasons are temporary. The days and nights are temporary. The centuries are temporary, etc. All the way up to the entire cosmic creation is temporary. It was created and it will be annihilated. Beyond this material world is another energy, as described in Bhagavad Gita, which is considered superior. It's eternal, it's blissful, and it's full of knowledge. But ultimately, all energy has a source, and that source of all energy is God. That's a definition of God. What is God? God is from that from which everything emanates. Everything around us is energy. Where did it come from? The light bulb is energy. Where did the electricity come from? It came from a powerhouse. Where did the coal in the electric generator come from? It came from the mountain. Where did the mountain came from? It was created. By whom? By God. So ultimately everything that we have or experience in the world is created and comes from somewhere. So we also have personality. So the energy to be a person must have a source, and that is the Supreme Person. Now that Supreme Person is obviously not like us. We're not the Supreme Person. We're part and parcel of the Supreme Person. Little sparks of a fire are considered fire, but they're just sparks, or little drops of the ocean. They're just drops. They don't have the potency of the whole ocean. A drop of water doesn't have tides and waves and facility to accommodate the life of a whale. So an ocean does. So there's a difference between the small living entities and the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord can expand himself. We expand ourselves in the form of sons and daughters and different energy that we work, like someone painted this painting, and that is his energy that he put into it, and it's an expansion of him, but he's not really that painting. Whereas the Lord, because everything is him, when he expands himself, he is that. And there are innumerable expansions. We've discussed in previous classes on days of incarnations how if you have one candle and you light another candle, and then you take that candle and light another candle and another candle and another candle, all have the same power, the candle power, but there is an original source of the candle. So Lord Ram and his brother Lakshman and his other brothers Satrughna and Bharat are all expansions of Vishnu. On the far right over there, there are two figures, Krishna and Balaram. Ram and Lakshman are those same personalities. And they appeared on Earth approximately 2 million years ago in another age called Treta Yuga. How do we know this? How can we trace out information or historical activities that took place 2 million years ago? A person's activities. They've been passed down by oral tradition. And we're going to read how a certain particular sage named Valmiki was empowered to write about this particular personality of Godhead and his incarnation. For those who know, Bhagavad Gita is how many verses? 700 verses. Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Purana, which is a history of the universe, is how many verses? 18,000. This Valmiki Ramayana is 24,000 verses. So there's no way we can tell the whole story today. But we can enter into the world of Ram, the time of Ram, and how this sage came about being empowered and enlightened to share with us and pass down this information that happened thousands of years ago. So please follow along and with this story as we enter the world of Ram. The first section in the Valmiki Ramayana is called the Bala Kanda. It means childhood Kanda. Bala means boyhood, childhood. And we're talking about Valmiki. The original author of the Ramayana is Valmiki. This revered saint lived long ago on the banks of the Tamasa River. While Valmiki sat in his thatched hut meditating and praying, a celestial being suddenly appeared before him. The celestial's spiritual form was enchanting, and he carried a stringed instrument called a veena. Narada Muni is a mystic space traveler. He journeys through outer space without a vehicle by a yoga process called Lagima Siddhi. He can also see clearly into the past, present, and future. This power is known as Trikalagyan. Captivated by Narada Muni, Valmiki inquired, "I know you are the son of Lord Brahma, the original demigod and creator of this universe. Like the air, you can enter into the hearts of all men and know their thoughts. My dear Narada, you must know what is puzzling me. I wonder, who is the greatest person on earth? He must be brave, pure, strong, virtuous, truthful, intelligent, and kind. Is there anyone who is completely freed from lust, anger, and greed? Is there someone who can protect the world from evil, yet be soft like a rose to the righteous? Of all people engaged in various types of work, who is the best above all others?" Narada Muni appreciated the sage's question. "Yes, Valmiki, I know of such a person. Although a faultless person is extremely rare, Lord Ramachandra is perfect. He is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who can be more exalted than God? Lord Ram is the seventh of 10 principal incarnations, known as the Das Avatar. God personally appeared on earth in the form of Ramachandra. He was born in the solar dynasty of kings, along with his expansions, his brothers, Bharat, Lakshman, and Svartugana. Lord Ram is powerful and has very attractive personality. He is highly intelligent and an expert speaker. Ram's eyes are like lotus petals. He has high, broad shoulders and a wide chest. His color is a soft, lustrous green, like a new blade of grass. The word Ram in Sanskrit means one who gives pleasure. The word Krishna means the most attractive person. So, coming in contact with the most attractive person, we have examples of sometimes you see someone who's attractive, sometimes it's hard to pull your attention away. Look at the world of Hollywood or politicians, how attention-grabbing they are. Huh? Headlines on every newspaper around the world sometimes. So what to speak of the most attractive person of all persons, or the most pleasing to be with? This is Lord Ram. He's so pleasing to his personality. He's called Ram. The Lord is grave like the sea, solid like a mountain, and beautiful like the moon. He appeared as the son of King Dasarath and his wife Kaushalya. Listen as I tell of his deeds. Narada Muni told Valmiki the entire story of Lord Ramachandra. He outlined Ram's transcendental pastimes with words that described the perfect character of the Lord. When he had finished, Narada Muni disappeared as mystically as he had appeared. Valmiki was overwhelmed with awe, satisfied to know that such a person as Lord Ram existed on earth. After Narada's departure, Valmiki went to bathe in the Tamasa River along with his disciple, Bharadwaj. Arriving on the banks of the river, both sages appreciated the charm of the place. Crystal clear water ran smoothly by the sandy shores fringed with fruit trees and fragrant flower bushes. The two sages were admiring the scenic beauty when they noticed a pair of karuncha birds playing in the trees. The birds were engaged in lovemaking when the male was struck by the arrow of a sinful hunter. writhing on the ground in pain, the bird soon died. The female bird was overcome with sorrow, wailing piteously over the death of her mate. Valmiki and Bharadwaj saw all this happen. Without a second thought, Valmiki cursed the sinful hunter who had mercilessly killed the innocent bird. You brutally killed this bird without reason. Moreover, you have done so in the mating season. Your sinful act cannot be ignored. Therefore, you will pay with your life as a reward. After cursing the hunter in this way, the two sages bathed in the Tamasa River and headed back to their ashram, a hermitage where they performed their spiritual activities. All the while, Valmiki's mind was restless. He kept repeating the words of the curse in his mind. He couldn't control or stop it. Pondering over and over, Valmiki realized that the words resembled Sanskrit poetry. "Those words I spoke to the hunter rhyme," Valmiki said to his disciple, Bharadwaj. "They could easily be fit to music. It is strange that from my sorrow, which in Sanskrit is shoka, came the verse, which is called shloka. There is something odd about the events of today." Arriving back at their ashram, the sages performed yoga meditation with Valmiki's other disciples. Sitting in trance, everyone became puzzled when a heavenly aroma filled the air. Divine sounds were heard all around, and gentle breezes blew pleasantly. As they sat in awe, Lord Brahma, the four-headed creator of the universe, descending from his abode in the upper regions of the cosmos, appeared before them. Lord Brahma was born from Lord Vishnu's navel at the very beginning of creation. He is the most important demigod in the entire universe, the head manager of universal affairs. "Today you cursed a hunter by divine arrangement," Lord Brahma explained. "You should not doubt this. The poetic meter that sprung from your mouth is called Anushtup. Using that same poetic rhythm, retell the story of Lord Ram that you heard from my son, Narada Muni. I have appeared to request you to do this. I will bless you with the vision to see all that happened. This is called Spurti, spiritual vision. You will see all the personalities within your heart and know their thoughts. Nothing will be withheld from you. By this work, your name will become immortal. The story you compose will be remembered and sung by pious people for as long as mountains stand on the earth and rivers flow to the sea." After instructing Valmiki like this, Lord Brahma flew away into heaven on his swan airplane. Can anyone else tell me of another person who had this divine vision of being in one place and being able to describe another event someplace else? Good. Sanjaya was in the palace with Dhritarashtra, who was blind, and he narrated the entire Bhagavad Gita telepathically, being empowered by Vyasadeva. The time was the age of Treta, more than 1 million years ago. Valmiki sat in yogic trance with his eyes half closed. He concentrated his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra. As his senses gradually became subdued and calm, the sage began visualizing all kinds of adventures in Ayodhya, the capital city of Kosala. Valmiki saw King Dasarath of the royal order surrounded by 350 wives. The citizens were happy and prosperous under the rule of this virtuous monarch. Ayodhya was fortified with parapets for fighting and surrounded by moats. The word Ayodhya means that which cannot be subdued by war. King Dasarath had 8 ministers expert in advising him and carrying out his orders. Sages and pious men lived throughout Ayodhya. Chief among them were Vishishta and Vamadev. Valmiki saw everything as clearly as one sees an object in his own hand. He composed the entire Ramayana of 24,000 verses, 6 sections, and 500 chapters. After completing the work, Valmiki wondered what to do with it. Whom could he teach it to? Who would sing the verses throughout the land? As Valmiki pondered, he realized he had 2 young disciples who were worthy. The youngsters were submissive and humble, eager to learn knowledge of the absolute truth. The twins were named Lav and Kush. They were actually the sons of Lord Ramachandra. However, this fact was unknown, both to the father and to the sons. for reasons that will be revealed in the story that follows. Lav and Kush. Valmiki gradually taught the handsome youths the entire Ramayana that he had composed. Neither of the boys knew that they were the sons of Ram, the hero of the epic. In Treta Yuga, the normal lifespan of a person was 10,000 years. In the present age, Kali Yuga, a person is lucky to live for only 100 years. During Treta Yuga, life was much more innocent and virtuous. Therefore, people lived much longer than they do today. After learning from Valmiki the entire poem by heart, Lav and Kush left the ashram that was situated on the banks of the Tamasa River. They traveled far and wide singing the poetry. Touring from village to village, Lav and Kush came to a sacrificial arena where many rishis and other holy men were performing rituals known as an Ashvamedha Yajna, or a horse sacrifice. When the two recited the Ramayana, tears came from all who listened. Soon everyone was talking about these two musicians who recited the Ramayana while playing the veena. Word of them soon reached the palace of Lord Ramachandra. Intrigued, Ram first saw the boys from a distance. He noticed their well-formed bodies, lotus-like eyes, and muscular physiques. King Ram sent an invitation requesting the boys to sing in the palace. King Ramachandra sat on the throne, surrounded by many guests who had gathered to hear the narration. Lav and Kush began playing celestial music on their veenas, their voices sounding angelic as they recited the epic. As the tale progressed, Lord Ram's attraction increased at every moment, with emotions swelling like tides in the sea. He descended from his royal throne and sat on the floor with the others, tears flowing profusely from his eyes. King Dasarath. Lav and Kush sang tales of Ayodhya. They told of the piety and virtues of this city, founded on the banks of the Sarayu River. They told of the glories of the ruler, King Dasarath, and they told of his sadness and woes. Although King Dasarath had 350 wives and ruled an entire kingdom without rival, he was still troubled. His illustrious dynasty, which had begun with the sun god, would end with him. King Dasarath was getting on in years and had no son to rule the kingdom after he left this world. One day the king called a meeting of his ministers and counselors. "For a long time I have been wondering how to continue the line of my family," he explained in a commanding voice. "Royal blood must continue to flow to my descendants. I have heard that those desiring progeny should perform an Ashvamedha Yajna to fulfill their desires. Please make the proper arrangements." Immediately, all the ministers present in that assembly agreed, "Oh, yes, very good proposal." Even the king's spiritual guide, Vashishta, was pleased. Shortly after this decision, King Dasarath's charioteer, Sumantra, approached the king in his private quarters. "Your Majesty, I heard you're planning a sacrifice. After hearing this news, I remembered a prophecy that I heard long ago. Because of this prophecy, I thought I should inform you at once." "Yes, yes," the king said, and offered the charioteer a seat. "Please, tell me about it." "Sanat Kumar spoke to a group of sages about your illustrious family dynasty," Sumantra began. "He predicted that your sacrifice will be successful only if you invite the saint named Rishyashringa to preside over the ceremony. He is the grandson of Kasyapa Muni from his son Vibhandaka. In Rishyashringa's youth, he lived in the forest. For the first years of his life, this boy never saw anyone but his protective father and the forest animals. He was pure and celibate. During that time, the territory of King Romapad, a pious monarch, met with disaster. There was a famine brought about by drought, and no one could grow any crops for food. The king's advisors suggested Romapad somehow bring Rishyashringa to their kingdom. In this way, they advised rains would flood the fields due to the pure saint's presence. The difficulty was how to separate the boy from his father. Vibhandaka would never consent to Rishyashringa's abandoning an ascetic's way of life, of an ascetic's way of life in the forest. So, what happens is that the ministers send some very young girls into the forest to play with Rishi Sringa. He's never seen anyone. He's never seen other children. So he's very innocent. And they come and they're playing with the ball and they invite him, oh, why don't you play? And they play together. And then he invites them. He says, why don't you come back to my hermitage? My father's out someplace and I can give you some fruits and roots and some water. So they come with him and they play like children around the hermitage and everything, and then they depart. And that night, because he had finally had some association with people his own age and the children, Rishi Sringa's mind was constantly thinking about them. Next morning again, he went to the forest and they began playing with him, and they said, rather than going to your hermitage, why don't you come to our town? That way you could see it and you could see so many other people. So in this way, they allured him back to their kingdom, where Romapad was the king, and because of his purity and his presence in the town and the country, rains indeed did come. So the story goes on how Dasarath finally brings Rishi Sringa. Oh, we got so much here, it's impossible to cover it all. Okay, so they're going to perform a yajna. So Rishi Sringa, Dasarath, went to King Romapad and asked him if he could have Rishi Sringa's association in his country, because he was told that the sacrifice he wanted to perform to have a son would be fruitful only if the sage's presence was there. And King Romapad, who had already reaped the benefit of his presence in his kingdom, was friendly and also gave Rishi Sringa permission to go to Dasarath's country, Ayodhya. Rishi Sringa was shown royal hospitality and became respected by everyone in Ayodhya. After he remained in the city for a while, hints of spring began to appear. The weather became warmer. Flower buds sprang from the trees and creepers, and feelings of freshness abounded in nature. At that time, Dasarath approached Rishi Sringa. For a long time, I've been anxious to perform a sacrifice to beget a child, a son. I was born in the Surya dynasty, beginning from the sun god, and must continue the royal family. Please begin proper rituals that will satisfy the supreme personality of Godhead. Without his sanction, no one can produce good children. The yajna you plan to perform is a complex Vedic ceremony, Rishi Sringa answered. First, you must send your ministers and servants throughout the world to collect the necessary ingredients. We will require mountains of gold, silver, jewels, and grains. We will have to offer hundreds of gallons of clarified butter into the sacred fire. So instruct the cowherds to begin preparing ghee. You must construct a large building, send invitations to kings from various countries, and finally, you must send a sacrificial horse on tour throughout the land, for we shall perform both the Ashwamedha and the Pushta Kamesti sacrifice. Prepare all these items, and within a year, we should be ready to perform the ceremony. In other words, producing a child, a good child, a powerful child, who is the supreme personality of Godhead, is not just a matter of a male and a female getting together and producing a child. There is a lot more to inviting an elevated soul to take birth in one's family. Dasarath was anxious to accommodate his priest. In Treta Yuga, the people offered majestic sacrifice that would be impossible to perform nowadays. He called Sumantra and gave orders to carry out the Rishi's wishes. Dasarath also summoned his spiritual preceptor, Vishishta, and inquired submissively how to prepare everything properly. After 1 year's time, spring again approached. Everything was ready. Kings from different parts of the world began to arrive in Ayodhya. As King Dasarath's yajna took place on earth, there was a meeting of devas in the heavenly planets. Devas are also called demigods, powerful beings who control the forces of nature throughout the universe. Powerful demigods in charge of universal management gathered at King Dasara's sacrifice to accept their share of the oblations. Trouble in the universe worried them. "The demons are causing uncontrollable havoc," one complained. "Headed by the Rakshasa of the name Ravana, the demons are terrorizing anyone engaged in religious activities." After performing intense austerities, Ravana received boons from Lord Brahma, another said. "No one can from any planet can conquer him. This evil asura harasses everyone, especially the cows, women, priests, and demigods. He commits unimaginable sins and has no restraint. Brahma granted him a benediction that he cannot be killed by any deva, Gandharva, or Yaksha, or even someone of his own race, the Rakshasas. What are we to do? No one in the entire universe can stop this rogue." There was silence. "This demon is a fool," Lord Brahma answered after a moment. "He's so proud of his austerity and power that in his arrogance, Ravana did not ask protection from death by a human being, a man. He never thought that a mere mortal could defeat him." As Lord Brahma was speaking to the group of demigods, the most powerful Lord Vishnu arrived, riding on his bird carrier, Garuda. All the demigods are subordinate to Lord Vishnu, for he is a plenary expansion of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Therefore, when Lord Vishnu arrived, the demigods bowed before him and offered obeisances. "Oh, Lord Vishnu, Your arrival is timely," one of the demigods said. "We are living in constant anxiety because of this demon, Ravana. This evildoer is living without an ounce of good intentions. He attacks women, kills innocent people, harasses us unceasingly. No one can stop him. We beseech you to incarnate as a human being and stop this Ravana's terrible activities. We don't know what else to do. Lord Brahma has just revealed that only a man can kill this scoundrel. King Dasarath is now performing a putrakesti sacrifice," Lord Brahma interjected. "The Saint Rishyashringa is presiding over the ceremony. May I suggest you solve this dilemma by appearing as King Dasarath's son? We have heard that he will be the father of four sons who will be your expansions. Please appear as one of your avatars. It is my vow that whenever the demoniac forces increase, I descend to rid the world of their influence," Lord Vishnu answered, in a voice pleasing to all who were assembled. "I know about this villain Ravana. The time is right to descend as the son of Dasarath, along with three of my other expansions. After killing the entire race of Rakshasas, who are followers of Ravana, I shall rule the world for 11,000 years. Then I shall return to my abode. In this way, I shall reestablish the religious principles to protect my devotees." Anybody can quote the verse from Bhagavad Gita? "Protect the pious and annihilate." Loud. This is the nature of that person. Everybody has a nature? We all have a nature? His nature is such. It's his vow. "To help me in this mission, you demigods should also take birth on earth. Ravana, in his arrogant request for benedictions, also did not ask protection from monkeys and bears. Therefore, take birth as monkeys and bears, according to my plan. We shall uproot the burden that is now troubling everyone." After speaking like this to the assembled demigods, Lord Vishnu flew away with the music of Vedic hymns emanating from Garuda's wings. While the Brahmins loudly chanted Vedic mantras in King Dasarath's sacrifice, a celestial glow began emanating from the fire. Suddenly, a heavenly being appeared from the flames. He had a dark complexion and wore crimson garments. His wrists and arms were decorated with golden ornaments. In his hands, the heavenly being carried a golden pot with a silver lid. The mystic being declared, "I am a messenger from the devas. This sacrifice of King Dasarath performed has pleased them. I have been commanded to present him with this sacred payasam, divine sweet rice. The king should in turn offer this beverage to his queens. They will become pregnant with his sons, as he has long desired." King Dasarath prostrated himself before the heavenly being and accepted the bowl of payasam. At that very instant, the mystic messenger disappeared back into the flames. The sacrifice came to a glorious conclusion. Gifts of charity were given to all who had attended. After Rishyashringa performed the final rites, Dasarath met privately with three of his queens. He gave the golden bowl first to his eldest queen, Kaushalya. She drank half the sacred drink and gave the bowl to Sumitra, who drank half of what was left. Sumitra then handed the bowl to the youngest queen, Kaikeyi, who also drank half. Dasarath then handed the bowl again to Sumitra, who finished the rest. Finally, everyone left for their respective homes. The satisfied demigods returned to the heavenly planets. Visiting kings went back to their territories, and Rishyashringa with Shanta returned to Anga, King Romapad's kingdom. Dasarath and his queens were overjoyed, for gradually his three wives began to show signs of pregnancy. Devas appear as monkeys and bears. Lord Brahma understood that the Supreme Personality of God had entered the womb of King Dasarath's wives. He therefore told the demigods to begin begetting children in the forms of monkeys and bears on earth, as Lord Vishnu had instructed. Through various celestial ladies, including the Apsaras, Yakshas, Nagas, Vidyadharas, Kanaras, and others, the devas produced Vanara children. Vanaras are a class of living being who have animal-like features, but who follow Vedic culture and speak Sanskrit. The monkeys and bears produced by the devas were powerful, gallant, swift, and skilled with different types of weapons. Lord Brahma begot a child named Jambavan, and Indra begot the ruler of the monkeys, Bali. The sun god, who radiates light and heat throughout the entire universe, begot a son named Sugriva, who was the younger brother of Bali. Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, had a son named Tara. He was intelligent like his father and acted as a minister to the monkey chiefs. Kubera, treasurer of the demigods, begot Gandhamadana, and the celestial architect Vishvakarma begot a mighty son named Nala. The Ashvini Kumars begot Mainda and Dvidvida. Vayu, god of the wind, produced the most celebrated of all, Hanuman. Hanuman was endowed with an invincible body and was the cleverest and strongest of all the Vanaras. These monkeys and bears, being expansions of the powerful devas, were able to change their forms at will. I've seen that on Star Trek. That must be like somebody read this and then did that. Actually, their strength and numbers increased daily until thousands of them roamed the planet Earth, awaiting the appearance of the Supreme Lord, Vishnu. It was April, in the month of Chaitra, the ninth day, when the first son was born to King Dasarath. His mother was Kaushalya, the queen who first drank the payasam. Next, the younger wife, Kaikeyi, gave birth to another boy, and finally Sumitra gave birth to twins, for she drank twice from the divine container. The firstborn filled Dasarath's heart with unbounded joy. He appeared on the ninth day of the waxing moon and was named Ramachandra. At that time, all the planets in the sky were inauspicious positions according to astrology. Because the Supreme Personality of God had descended to the material world from his spiritual abode in Vaikuntha, demigods played celestial music, and Gandharvas, who are like angels, sang melodious tunes. Apsaras, celestial women, danced in jubilation while flowers showered from the sky and fell on King Dasara's palace. Shortly after Ram's birth, Bharat was born, and not long after him, the twins Lakshman and Shatrughna appeared. All four brothers are amsas, or plenary parts, of the Supreme Lord. When the children were born, King Dasarath ordered gorgeous arrangements made throughout Ayodhya. Hundreds of musicians began playing various instruments. Dancing girls performed all around the city. Colorful flags and festoons were put up everywhere, and the Brahmins chanted auspicious mantras and prayers. The king was so overjoyed that he opened his coffers and gave away treasures of gold, silver, and cows by the thousands in a grand festival. The citizens rejoiced. Gradually, days turned into weeks, weeks into months, and months into years. As the boys grew, Lakshman became extremely attached to Ram. Whenever Ram ate, Lakshman ate. When Ram slept, Lakshman was by his side. The same thing happened with Bharata and Shatrughna, his younger brother. The boys would never be separated. It was a happy family, and the citizens of Ayodhya were joyful. Dasara's affection progressively grew strongest for his oldest son, Ram. The boy was uncommonly handsome. He looked like a god advented on earth. He was brave, truthful, expert in military skills, especially archery. He was always submissive and wished to please his father at every moment. Ram excelled the others in every aspect of learning, but he was never proud. When the boys reached their 16th year, Dasarath began considering how to get them married to suitable princesses. Any questions or comments, or anyone want to take the story to another direction? Yes. Oh, good question. He thinks that Lord Balaram is always born before Lord Krishna, as his elder brother. Actually, the story of Lakshman reveals why he took birth as the older brother. As a younger brother, when his elder brother, Ram, was exiled to the forest, Lakshman was furious, but he was the younger brother. He couldn't do anything. He was submissive. He had, by every proper etiquette, he couldn't do anything. So his sentiment was, never again will I take this kind of a position. Although he does, but therefore he became the elder brother in the next incarnation of Balaram. Yes, Prabhu. Good question. Did King Dasarath know that Lord Ram was the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Here's a story which reveals that. Even before his appearance, in the palace of King Dasarath, they had deities of Sita and Ram, and they worshipped those deities in the palace. So yes, he must have. When those deities were present, and King and Ram came back from killing Ravana and was king, there was a Brahmin in Ayodhya who would not eat until on any given day until he saw Lord Ram. But what happens when Lord Ram was out of town or busy in the palace and never came out? That Brahmin would fast because he never saw Lord Ram's lotus feet. So word of this Brahmin's vrat somehow got back to Ram in the palace. And he told Lakshman, you take the deities, give them to that Brahmin, so he'll always be able to stay regulated and have his prasadam daily. So that Brahmin kept those deities, and when he became very elderly and was just about to die, he called Hanuman, and he gave those deities to Hanuman. And then knowledge of those deities became lost. What happened to them? Where were they? No one knew. For hundreds, thousands, even a million years. Finally, in about 1200 AD, in the town of Udupi, South India, one of the great acharyas named Madhvacharya was born. As we just read, Hanuman is the son of Vayu, the wind god. And Madhvacharya is also the son of Vayu, the wind god. So he is related. And because he's a great acharya, he's Tweetkala Gyan. He knew about those deities. So he told one of his disciples named Narahari Tirtha, those deities of Sita and Ram are in the king of Kalinga's treasury. Go get those deities and bring them back to me, please. So Narahari Tirtha, went and traveled by foot from Udupi. India's like a V. Udupi is on the north, southwestern side, and Puri, Kalinga, is in the northeast. So he traveled the whole distance. And when he arrived in Jagannath Puri, the king died. So there was only a young boy who was now the king, and there was all kinds of disarray, and no one knew anything about the treasury, or, you know, the country was in great loss. So what they do at that time, according to Vedic custom, was they would hold a procession to pick a regent, a person who would take over for the young boy as king until he came of age. And they would have the royal elephant go down Grand Road where Lord Jagannath goes from Jagannath Temple to Gundicha. And the elephant would carry a garland. And whoever he garlanded would be serendipitously chosen as the regent, as the head of the government. Narahari Tirtha was chosen. So for 12 years, Narahari Tirtha ruled Kalinga. And the boy grew up to become his disciple and king. So when he turned over the kingdom back to the rightful heir, that boy was so submissive. He was, what can I do for you, Gurudev, to show you my gratitude? He could have taken the kingdom. Easily he could have usurped it. He was the king, but and had all the military power. But he didn't. He taught that boy Vaishnavism, and that man now said, what can I possibly do? And he said, actually, I was sent here on a mission by my Gurudev, Madhvacharya, in Udupi, to retrieve the Sitaram deities that are in your treasury. I'd like to take those deities back to my Gurudev. So the king arranged that the Sitaram deities be given to Narahari Tirtha. He went back to Udupi, and he gave them to Madhvacharya, who received them 3 months before he left this world. This is in a book I forget the name of it, but it's just like we have the Prabhupada Lilamrita, this is the Valmiki Ramayana, there's a book by Madhvacharya's disciples, The Life of Madhvacharya, and it's mentioned in there, and those deities are still in Udupi, and you can find this in the purport to the Madhya Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So apparently he did know that the Sita and Ram were the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and our time is up. Jai Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Hare Krishna.